Hi everyone, I am a fourth year PhD student at UMass Dartmouth, and I mostly work on waveform modeling and data analysis within SXS, LIGO and LISA. So today I'll talk about the surrogate model for gravitational wave signals from binary black holes. And this model is built on black hole perturbation theory and is tuned to momentum identity. And this is a model that will that basically covers both the comparable mass ratio regime and the extreme mass ratio regime. So I'll talk more about it as we go. So this is a brief outline of what I do. Is I mostly my focus in waveform modeling, but then I build surrogate models both based on numerical relativity as well as based on perturbation theory, and then I use those in analyzing the gravitational wave signals. And I also build like rapid data analysis framework that can be used for binary black holes and especially for binary neutron stars to do the beam pretty fast. So today I'll focus on this perturbation theory based surrogate model that we are building. So here's a list of collaborators with whom I developed this model to build this surrogate. I worked with Scott Phil, Scott Hughes, Gaurav Khanna, Bijay, Matthew, and Mark Schill, and others. And then we also compared it with the recent development that like second order cell force waveform model that has come in. So we also do some comparison and try to understand like how good we are doing or how good they are doing. So with the UK cell force group mostly. Okay, so I'll first give a brief outline of what is gravitational waves and what we are trying to achieve here. I am sure, I mean, maybe people do not need it, but still for the sake of completeness. So here is a schematic of what generally happens is on the upper panel is two black holes, two blobs. Basically, they are inspiraling against each other. Then at some point, they will merge. And as that merger happens, it generates gravitational waveform. And that we can basically see in two different polarization, H plus and H cross. And as a function of time that grows and towards the merger or at the merger, it peaks to its highest amplitude and then it decays down and gives the ring down signal. And this gravitational radiation, we can decompose them in negative two spin weighted spherical harmonics, and that gives us all different kinds of modes. The 2-2 mode is the dominant mode. We call it the quadrupolar mode, and there will be higher order modes that depending on this spin, mass ratios and all, they might also be important. And typically these gravitational waves, they are described by at least 17 parameters. So we have intrinsic parameters like the masses and spins, and oftentimes which are generally disregarded until most of the models now are the eccentricity parameters. But the binaries can also have eccentricities and especially if they are formed in globular clusters or galactic nuclei. And then we have the extrinsic parameters that tells us how far the binary is from us and what is the sky localization angle and so on. Okay, so here's basically a summary of different kinds of waveform model that we have and that are generally used in data analysis. So we have numerical relativity waveforms. I mean, the best way to get the most accurate waveform, but the problem there is it's very expensive. Depending on the system, how much eccentricity you have, spin precession or not, it might take a week to a month to generate one single waveform. So which means that you cannot really use numerical relativity waveforms directly in your data analysis because it will take forever. So people came up with different other methods to generate waveforms faster. So one is the phenomenological methods. So among those, there are post-Newtonian approximations, which are the name suggests what it does. But typically, this post-Newtonian approximation only works in the inspiral part. So as you go towards the merger, that approximation fails. So like you cannot really use post-Newtonian to get the full inspiral merger ring down waveform. Then comes the phenomenological waveform models, which are typically based on intuition that comes from post-Newtonian approximation, and then you have extra fitting parameters and which you generally obtain from fitting to numerical ATPD data. Similarly, we also have the effective one-body waveform models where you describe the two-body binary is in a one mode as a one-body system, and still you have some fitting parameters that you will obtain from numerical relativity waveforms. However, these phenomenological models and effective one-body models, they're especially the phenom models are pretty fast, but sometimes they often compromise the accuracy, and that might be problematic for some system where you have a high signal to noise ratio or you have precision and so on. So in recent times, we are building surrogate models, which are completely data-driven model. We do not make assumption about the system. The first set of surrogate models were built on numerical relativity waveforms. And those are now being used in data analysis for many studies. And more recently, we started building surrogate models based on black hole perturbation theory, and that would focus of this talk today. Okay, so this is a brief summary of what point particle black hole perturbation theory is. So in PPBHPT, we model the secondary black hole, which is the smaller black hole, as a point particle with no internal structure. And this framework was originally developed for the extreme mass ratio in spirals, where you have one supermassive black hole and one stellar mass black hole. And for that, this assumption is valid because you can, with respect to the supermassive black hole, the stellar mass black hole can be treated as a point particle. In this scenario, we first compute the trajectory of the point particle, and then we use that trajectory to compute the gravitational emission by solving the Topolsky equation. This is basically the accurate way to generate waveform for extreme mass ratio binaries, because the assumption is valid over there. So this is a schematic of what we generally do to get the full in spiral margering down waveform from perturbation theory. So we solve the perturbation theory in the in-spiral part. So that gives us the in-spiral waveform here. And then we solve the perturbation again at the ring down part. And then this part which connects the in-spiral to ring down, we use a transition algorithm that was originally developed by Orion Thorne, and later on it was improved by Scott Hughes and his students. This is a schematic of where we can trust the perturbation theory waveforms. So in the x-axis, it shows the mass ratio, and the numerical relativity is over here in the small mass ratio regime, or the comparable mass ratio regime. I should mention that whenever I will say small mass ratio, I would mean comparable mass ratio. In this comparable mass ratio regime, mass ratio 1 to 10 or 15, that's where you can trust the numerical relativity, because that's where the numerical relativity course has been perfected for. And then in the post-Newtonian theory is where you basically it goes all over the parameter space. However, it can only give you the in-spiral waveform and not the margering down waveform. Finally, we have the perturbation theory, which is valid for really large mass ratios, and it does not come to the comparable mass ratio regime. However, the intention of this particular project is that to take the perturbation theory waveforms even at the comparable mass ratio regime. With that intention, we build this particular model, which we call the BHPTNR surrogate. So this is currently just a non-spinning model, and it goes from mass ratio 1 to almost 10 to the power 4. I'll first mention that why we want to build another model. There are NR surrogates, phenom, or EOB models, which are really good when you are focusing on the comparable mass ratio regime. But the problem is, once you go to high mass ratio, maybe you cross mass ratio 10, mass ratio 15, then none of these models are accurate in that regime. And we already have detected one binary black hole, which has a mass ratio of around 10. So if you detect something of around like muscle tissue 15, 16, you cannot really trust any of the existing models. So there should be something. And it's quite difficult for numerical relativity codes right now to push to that front, even though there are people who are working on that, and maybe a couple of years down the line or 5 years down the line will have that ability. And on the other hand, perturbation theory, as you go to high mass ratios, they can give you accurate waveforms. However, even for perturbation theory waveforms, they are computationally expensive. They're not as expensive as NR, but still, if it takes 1 hour to get full IMR, you cannot do data analysis with that. So people came up with like Kluge models, which is faster, but again, that's an approximation. And recently, there is a second order cell force waveform, which is pretty fast and has been shown to be accurate enough with matches to numerical relativity. But that is all only in spiral only waveforms. So this is an overview of our model that we have built. So it's available through Black Hole Perturbation Toolkit as well as through GW Surrogate. And it covers mass ratio from 2.5 to 10 to the power 4. So it covers both the large mass ratios as well as the comparable masses. And it is trained on perturbation theory waveforms that comes from solving the Topolsky solver. However, it has only the linear perturbation. So we have only zero order post-adiabatic terms. We don't have the second order cell force in our model. And then we have around 25 positive M modes up to L equal to 10. Like this is like many, like at least 8 to 10 times more modes that any other existing models can provide. And our models are around 35,000 M longs, which means it would be relevant for LIGO and Cosmic Explorer for most of the parameter space. And finally, these are calibrated to numerical relativity in the small mass ratio regime up to L equal to 5. We cannot go beyond that because the NR waveform becomes very noisy. So you cannot really do a proper calibration over there.
You mind if I ask a question?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm just wondering what sets the cutoff at mass ratios of 10 to the 4? Just naively, I think since you're matching on perturbation theory, you can go to like arbitrarily large mass ratios.
That's true. The reason is in this book, while we can in principle go to 10 to the power 6 or even further, as I mentioned, that the waveform length is limited to 35,000 M at this point. So even if I go to 10 to the power 5, 4 or 10 to the power 5, it will not really help LISA data analysis, where you actually to find the extreme mass ratio binaries. So that's the reason we just stop at 10 to the power 4, because at that regime, 35,000 M is nothing. I mean, it's not going to help you in data analysis, but it's more like our focus is LIGO and the Cosmic Explorer type of observatories, where you would see high mass ratio binaries, like mass ratio 10, 50, 100, something like that, and where this length of the waveform is good enough for data analysis.
Okay, thanks.
So, can I ask a question?
Yes.
Not sure you can hear me well. So, your point is when taking the high relativity cannot go to high mass ratios in the way you call it because of numerical inaccuracies. But on the other hand, you're replacing them with the Tarkovsky solver that doesn't have the higher order perturbation. So what is also introducing some systematics there. So why would you say waveforms are sensible?
Yes, so you were saying how perturbation theory is coming to comparable mass ratio?
No, I'm saying perturbation theory is not carried out to sufficiently high order to have the back reaction accounted for properly.
Yes, there are some systematics, but I'll show later on like how we are matching it to numerical relativity in the comparable mass ratio regime.
Okay, maybe I'll ask again later.
Right,
thank you.
Yeah. Okay.
So you're saying you are training your server model based on time domain waveform? Like,
yes.
But this is very expensive, right? Like in the inspiral stage, this especially in the large estimation. Mass ratio limit,
mm-hmm.
Obviously involves quite slowly, right? And there is some early work, for example, done by Martin Vandermeer, mm-hmm. right? So they have frequency domain waveform,
yeah.
also inspired from the cell force calculation or gravity calculation. I think that already works quite well. So why do you still want to? I don't know why do you still want to use the time domain waveform for the inspiration?
I think in the time domain, we can incorporate other. This is a solver that over the decades, Gaurav Khanna and Scott Hughes, they have developed. And I think when you have the time domain solver, you can add the other kind of astrophysics or anything else you want to put in your source term. And we also develop other things we intend to develop. So that's why we just use the time domain solver that was available to us at that point. And when we started this project, we did not have the idea that perturbation theory waveforms can be mapped to that regime pretty accurately, which I'll show later. So
people know, right? People have shown, as I said, Martin Vandermeer, and show that this thing works really well for the Israel thing. And
That's true. What Martin and Harald they kind of showed is that the difference. If you take the difference of the first order cell force or the perturbation PA term there and the NR, the differences were very small. But it was not something that was tested at the waveform level. So I'll show that if you want to match to the waveform level, you have to do more than just taking the perturbation waveform. Because you need the second order cell force term there. Even if they are small, you have to get those.
Okay.
So, I think I just wanted to point out the challenges that it was not clear to us whether we can build a single model from extreme mass ratio and also to comparable mass ratio regime. And the question there was, can we really extend the framework in the small mass ratio regime? Well, whether we have to do calibration or if it is whether that will work for the high mass higher order modes. So this is what we do to rescale our perturbation theory waveforms to numerical relativity. Because I mentioned that in our perturbation theory waveform, we only have the zero PA term. So there is no higher order cell force term or the second order cell force term in our waveform. So in the comparable mass ratio regime, to match it to numerical relativity, what we do is that we rescale our raw perturbation theory waveform with two different terms, which we call the alpha beta, while we rescale the time axis with beta, and we rescale the waveform strain amplitude with alpha, and that alpha is a function of the L of different modes. And a priori, we do not know the values for alpha and beta, but we get those values from optimizing the error between the scaled perturbation theory waveform and the numerical relativity. And for this case, for NR, we use NR hybrid surrogate as a proxy. So we take the, if T margin is denoted by T equal to zero, we take negative 5,000 M, 215 M length of data for each waveform. And then we get the alpha beta values for each mass ratio in our model. And this is done up to L equal to 5. And this is an example of how things look like. So in the left, I show the waveform before the calibration. So red is the perturbation theory and black dashed lines are the NR surrogate. And I'm showing four different modes just for the presentation, 2, 2, 3, 3, 4, 4, and 5, 5. And as you can see, in all modes, not only the amplitudes are mismatched, but also the frequency evolution is different. The phase evolution is different between the NR and the perturbation theory waveform. However, once we do the calibration, that we multiply our perturbation theory waveform with these two numbers, one for time and one for the amplitude, it matches to NR really well. Like it, so I'm quoting these numbers here. So this epsilon IMR, that's the like full inspired Almaja ring down error. And for 2-2 mode, it's 10 to the power negative 3 now. And if you go to the 5-5 mode, it would be 5 into 10 to the power negative 2. And you can see the early inspired part, they are matching really well. Only there are some differences at the merger part. And one of the reason that comes because currently we do not have the remnant information going in our modeling. And in perturbation theory, the mass scale is always the same, but that's not correct when you have the NR because in numerical relativity, at the merger ring down part of the waveform that is described by the remnant mass and the remnant spin. So because of that difference, there would be some mismatch. And this is also mass ratio 4, where the difference between initial mass and the remnant mass would be much higher than high mass ratio systems.
Sorry, so this constant alpha and beta, they're not constant if you change the mass ratio, right? So,
yes, yes.
So do you have a
big
formula or?
Yeah, I'll show how they look like as a function of mass ratios. So this is how our alphas for different L and beta that varies as a function of mass ratio. Also, I'm plotting this. I'm not sure whether it's you can distinguish it. So this line here, which is brown dashed line. So that's 1 over 1 plus 1 over q. And that factor is basically the naive alpha beta value one would expect. Because in perturbation theory, the mass scale that we used originally was the mass of the primary, because the secondary you did not really care before. And on the NR side, the mass scale is the total mass of the binary. So the waveforms you are getting, they have two different mass scales. So you can, you have to multiply this 1 over 1 plus 1 over Q factor to go from the perturbation theory mass scale to the NR mass scale. So one would expect that if there is nothing else going on, then you just multiply that and it would match to numerical relativity, which did not happen. So here also I'm showing that you have these alpha beta values, they are, their functional form as a function of mass ratio that qualitatively is very similar to this 1 over 1 plus 1 over Q functional form, but there are some extra terms that are going on. And this is because, like we, as I mentioned, that we have only the zero PA terms in our perturbation theory waveform. So the higher order terms that would be important in that particular regime, especially in comparable mass ratio regime, that is responsible for the whatever is the difference between this 1 over 1 plus 1 over Q and this beta or the alpha factors here.
Sorry for the interruption. So just so I...
Yeah, no problem.
Just to clarify this for me, so I can't do the math in my head, but the 1 over 1 plus 1 over Q, is that the same thing as sending the small mass to reduced mass and the big mass to total mass? I mean, that's the kind of rescaling that people do, you know, in self-force calculations to match with numerical relativity. And for many different calculations, that kind of rescaling seems to work very well. So is that
it should be the same thing. Yeah. So it's basically like in our perturbation, we have mass scale of M1. So it's sending M1 to total mass, like M1 plus M2.
Okay. So the other question I had about this is, so the fact that you're taking the amplitude with an alpha to the power of L, is that something that can be justified with that kind of, you know, rescaling that we just mentioned?
So it's not to the power of L. I think like this notation might be a bit difficult. So this is this means that alpha is a function of L.
Okay. Yeah, that's not very good notation.
Yeah. Sorry for that.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, so I'll move on to this plot where I show that once you do the rescaling, how the waveform matches to numerical relativity. So here the all modes summed up error is this cyan, and then I show four different representative mode 2, 2, 2, 5, 5, and the solid curves are the inspiral margining down waveform error, and dashed curve is only the inspiral error. And what you can see is that the 2-2 mode error is always like 10 to the power negative 3, which is very good. Like this is at the level of what the Fenau models or DOB models have when they are compared to numerical relativity. And then for the 3-3 and 4-4, the error increases a little bit, go to 10 to the power negative 2. And then if you take only the inspiral part, then the error drops further. As I mentioned, that the merger part, because of the remnant information, there are some amplitude mismatches, but that will go away as you go to high mass ratios. So next thing we compute is the mismatches. So these are frequency domain mismatches, which one generally cares when they do want to know that how good these waveforms are when you put the detector in. And we assume the advanced LIGO detector sensitivity curve here. And I'm showing the mismatches as a function of the total mass. A mass, total mass 40 to 200 for four different mass ratios, 4 to 9. And this black dashed line is the kind of a typical benchmark people use to show that this is this has a good mismatch. And what we can see that once you cross mass ratio 5, then the mismatches are always below 10 to the power negative 2, indicating that it can be used for faithful data analysis. So the next plot I'll show is, this is an example where we are trying that how small we can go in mass ratio and still get a good match against numerical relativity. And this plot is quite interesting because it shows a waveform at mass ratio 1.2. And this is a regime where the time domain solver that we have that cannot give you any waveform. It basically breaks down. So if you want to create a generate a waveform below mass ratio 2.5, it just breaks down. However, once we build the surrogate then learns the waveform, and then it can give you a waveform even at mass ratio 1, mass ratio 1.2, whatever you want. So it's basically the surrogate is extrapolating here. But even then, you can take that surrogate output and match it to numerical relativity at mass ratio 1.2. So that's the lowest I have been able to go until now and match it to numerical relativity well. By well, I mean a match or an error of 10 to the power negative 2-ish. And however, the higher modes at that regime, they are not really cooperating. But still that you can match your 2-2 mode to numerical relativity with that error is really impressive. And then you can see some differences here, but again, you are going to mass ratio 1, which means the remnant masses will be more important at that region. Okay, and this, so now I'll show a bunch of plots showing basically the validation to show that what modeling choice we are making that still can give you waveform even at different domain of either mass ratios or in time. For example, here at mass ratio 8, what I show is very early in spiral of the waveform here and later in spiral margining down. So the purpose of this plot is to show that even though you're using the late in spiral margining down waveform to get the calibration parameters, those, once you have the calibrated waveform, they match to numerical relativity even at earlier time, which you can see there, or I mean, exactly on top of each other. And at this, I mean, the error would be 10, around like 10 to the power minus 4 for this waveform here. So the next is we go to mass ratio 30. So this is the highest SXS numerical relativity simulations we have at this point. I show three different modes here, 2, 2, 3, 3, and 4, 4. So we have the SXS NR in red, then the calibrated perturbation in black dashed line. And also for a reference, we also show the SEOB NR, which is an EOB waveform, for all different modes. And I'm also showing the errors, the inspired IMR error and the only inspired error. And what you can see that for the 2-2 mode, the SEOB does a bit better than the perturbation theory waveforms or the calibrated perturbation theory waveforms. But one thing I should mention here that the calibration is done only at the comparable mass ratio regime. So mass ratio 3 to mass ratio 10. So at this mass ratio regime, Q30, I'm basically using the information that I have from the comparable mass ratio regime. So I'm not doing an on-the-fly calibration here. And then if you look at the higher order modes here, then you will see that the perturbation theory is doing much better than the SUV, especially at the margering down part where SUV has offset from numerical relativity.
So can I ask a question?
Yes, please.
So the perturbation theory has two free parameters, right? Alpha and beta.
Yes.
That's right.
Yeah.
So how many parameters does SCOB have?
I do not really know the number, but I would believe that it would be more than that. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. I think it would be an interesting comparison then, because of course the more free parameters you have, the better you can fit the numerical relativity. But then, yeah, so that would be the fair comparison.
Okay. So next we are trying to explain that what this alpha beta basically mean. Like this is phenomenologically this works, but it's also quite puzzling to us like why they are working. So this is kind of a summary of what I mentioned earlier, that we have raw perturbation theory waveform, and then we have the alpha beta parameters. And the beta calibrates time, alpha calibrates the strain, and that takes up to numerical relativity. On the other hand, the cell force waveform modeling people, what they have done, so they computed the first order, the 1P terms here, or the second order cell force here, and then they add, when they have a 0P and 1P term together, then that matches to numerical relativity in the small mass ratio regime. So this kind of hints that in a way, what we are doing and what they're doing is kind of similar, but it just coming from different formalisms. So, and to test that, we do some comparisons, which I'll show in later slides. But one thing that we mentioned that here, this alpha beta are just a number for one mass ratio. However, the 1PA corrections here in the cell force calculation, that's a frequency dependent quantity. And for our case, it's not. So that's another puzzle, like why still we are getting to numerical relativity and they're going to numerical relativity from the cell, almost same 0P waveforms here. So what we have found that the 1PA cell force waveform can be obtained using the 0P cell force waveform using an alpha beta rescaling. So to demonstrate that, what we do is that we take the 0P waveform from the cell force group, and we take the 1P and 0P plus 1P waveform from the cell force group. And then we ask the question that whether we can find a similar alpha beta values for this case too, from 0P to 1P. And what we find that yes, we can. We can find a constant number beta and constant number alpha, which takes the 0P cell force to the 1P cell force. And you can see it's matching everywhere in the time axis. So this gives some meaning to what alpha beta rescaling is achieving. So it basically recovers the higher order cell force correction from the zero order PA waveform itself.
Two things.
Yes.
Can you not? I mean, this is an experimental search in some sense, right? You're trying to see if there's enough of data that's matching. But I mean, as opposed to the rescaling, that is something that you try and then fit. The perturbative calculation is built on a firm footing. Can you not just try and use the H0 plus the H1 to see if you can derive some sort of motivate some analytical understanding of what the alpha and beta parameters should be?
I might have missed some of the things that you said, but I think what you say is that the alpha beta is somehow obtained by trial and error, and where the cell force, like 1PS cell force, that comes from like proper analytical calculation. Is that what you meant?
Yeah, essentially. And so then use that to motivate what the alpha beta scaling should be analytically.
Yes. I agree. Yeah, that's one of the motivation why you are doing it. And however, one thing I'll mention is like the alpha beta terms is whether there's some motivation behind it, and the motivation is simply like going from M1 to M1 plus M2, because I showed that 1 plus 1 over Q, that's what you'd expect. However, that did not happen. So we allowed them to take a free parameter, take any parameter they want. But this form is basically, if you consider alpha equal to beta, and then naively you'd expect them to be equal to 1 plus 1 over Q. So there is some motivation behind why we chose this particular way of rescaling. But of course, that what we found that does not work. So we need more. So that's how the extra parameters came in with more freedom, that we allow alpha beta to take any value. Then we allowed alpha to take values of different values for different L and so on. So and that's why we kind of think that what is taken care of by alpha beta is not only this conversion from M1 to M, but also this higher order terms you need. And this is one of the demonstration that it is doing that, because you can get an equivalent alpha beta values from 0PA to 1PA. However, there's one thing here is that this 0PA and 1PA term in these cell force waveforms, they come from frequency domain solver. So the 0PA waveform in our time domain solver and their frequency domain solver is not exactly the same. There are some normalization factor that might be different, but no matter what, I mean, whatever normalization constant you did, we have checked that in all cases, you can find the alpha and beta that takes the 0PA to 1PA cell force. So that's like a demonstration of how it works.
Okay.
And then this is like, we do a bunch of comparison with the second order cell force to convince ourselves that once we do the calibration, we do not miss anything in the intermediate master issue regime, because at the extreme master issue regime, all these alpha beta values will go to one. So it will recover the uncalibrated raw perturbation theory waveforms. However, in the regime like master issue 100 or 200, that's where you will see difference from raw perturbation theory waveforms. And we want to see whether it matches to second order cell force computation. And this is one example where I show that even at master issue 100, like it matches to second order cell force at like early in spiral, also at the late in spiral. And then the as the second order cell force stops at the in spiral, you cannot really do anything at the march adding down part. Okay, so what we are doing next is, as I mentioned, that this is kind of a first such model where we show that one model can basically go to both comparable mass and the large mass ratio regime. And if you find high mass ratio systems, then this would be the kind of models that you can trust and use in data analysis. But also it can be used for searches for high mass ratios binaries or the subsolar mass binaries where you have high mass ratios. So currently we are extending the model to aligned spin. The primary black hole will have spin, the secondary will not have spin. And we'll go from mass ratio 3 to 10,000. And in the spin, we are going from 0.6 to negative 0.6 to positive 0.6. And this is almost done. So we are hoping to put this model out in a month or two. And then I'm working on building the eccentric version of the model. So we are going up to eccentricity around 0.3-ish. And for this model, we are not going to extreme mass ratios. We are stopping at mass ratio 100 because building eccentric model is kind of hard because you'll have more modulations come in, and that is has its own challenges. And also we are mostly focusing on high mass ratios if they are ever detected, and they might they might come from galactic nuclei or the global clusters and have some high eccentricity. So this will have more chances to have some eccentricity, and that's why we are focusing there. And we just started working on building a precessing spin model, which will have a slightly misaligned system, and then it goes from mass ratio 3 to 10,000. Our model is publicly available through black hole perturbation toolkit. It's called the BHP Denner surrogate, but it also is available through the GW surrogate, where we have all the numerical relativity surrogates and the perturbation theory surrogates available. And both are pretty easy to get. So I'll stop with this particular plot here. So one of the main motivation of this modeling is that to take perturbation theory waveform from the extreme mass ratio regime to the comparable mass ratio regime, and to show that it matched to numerical relativity waveform really well mode by mode. And that's something we are pushing currently. So we have been able to show that for the 2-2 mode, it can match up to from 1.2 mass ratio to 10 to the power 4-ish. However, we are working on putting the eccentricity spins and the precessions in the model. That's all. Thanks for listening. I'll be happy to answer if there's any other questions.
So can you hear me well?
Yes.
So for this next follows that you're working on, that you showed in the last slide, the idea will be the same, just try to fit these two functions, alpha and beta, but for other parts of the base space.
Yes. Yeah. So for the aligned spin, the exact same procedure works. However, for the eccentric spin and the precessing spin, we are not yet at that stage to do a calibration. So we are building the surrogate model right now.
I see. And so I guess this will be for the aligned spinning model. This will be other functions. Do you know how those are related with the zero spin case?
So for the aligned spin model, the functional form is so for zero spin it comes down to that. So for the aligned spin, it basically have another terminology which will take you to the spin. So it would have two. So this term, this is the same exact procedure that works for aligned spin. But yeah, so to keep it short. But for precessing spins, I'm sure there'd be much more things to do. So we have not gone to that stage yet.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? So for me, you're claiming that you can recover the first order self-host result just from the zeroth order. Do you think it's an exact statement, or it's just it's approximate observation?
I don't say this is an exact statement because we have to do much more than that, and but it hints that you can get that. And one of the things that we are currently trying to do with the self-force, because the self-force formalism, they have the first order self force and the higher second order self force. However, that second order self force has some approximation, especially in the phase terminology, they have some approximations. And so one thing that we are trying to understand is what this alpha beta means, but at the same time, from the self force side, what they're trying to understand is what they are missing, like what might be the third order self force or so on. So we are doing some more studies there, but it's not like concrete yet. Yeah, but at least for us, there is some hint that what the alpha beta is capturing is some of this higher order self force term. But we cannot really pinpoint that this is second order self force, because we are matching against numerical relativity. So which is quite possible that we are not only getting the second order self force in that way, but maybe also the next order cell force. And that's what we are trying to understand. But I don't have really any concrete result to show right now.
Yeah, I mean, from earlier exercises, right? So people use symmetric mass ratio instead of mass ratio.
Yeah.
And then suddenly you find much better agreement. I guess that just means that you are doing some effective resummation. And
yes.
Somehow this parameterization, this symmetric mass ratio is a good resummation, right? So maybe this capture, I don't know, a major part of this second order cell force time, but it's hard for me to believe that it capture everything. I mean, the cell force people should be able to, since they have the leading and next leading order calculation, they should be able to check themselves, right? I mean, it will be surprising that the leading order calculation already is enough, right? To the next leading order term, you just need a leading order term and do some rescaling.
Yeah, but this is exactly what that test is like I'm not using anything from our time domain model here or from numerical relativity. This is just showing that the first order cell force or the zero peer cell force, you can multiply that with alpha beta and you can get one peer cell force.
Yeah, well, it has to happen for a reason, and it's hard for me to believe.
That's why, I mean, we don't have the analytical way of showing it yet, but like phenomenologically we can see that the zero PA to one PA just works within the cell force waveform too. Like if you do not use our perturbation or NR, it's just within the cell force itself you can get that. But like I can't really show analytical expression at this point. I don't have that.
Okay. Any additional questions?
Yes. Yeah. So you mentioned at some point that EOB, for the 2-2 mode, EOB seemed to be doing better, but your waveform was doing better for other modes. So have you compared like the overall mismatch across all modes versus EOB and seen across parameter space and see which one does better?
No, I don't have something like that. But like, so if you are saying whether UOB is like, if you are taking UOB in the comparable mass ratio regime, this is, I mean, quite good, because you can see from here that if you are going to mass ratio 3, 4, and 5, we are good, but we are not really good. And I'm not advocating anyone to use this model at mass ratio 3, 4, and 5. We have NR surrogates, phenom models, and that should be used over there. However, if you go high mass ratios, if you cross mass ratio 9 or 10, that's where you should, this model would be much better than other models. And
I would just be interested in seeing above mass ratio 10, let's say, a comparison of your model with UOB.
Okay, I see. Yeah, beyond mass ratio 10, we do have some comparisons, and we see like a clear trend like this, like the higher modes are always much better in perturbation theory. But we cannot really, we can only do waveform to waveform comparison over there, because after you cross mass ratio 15, then we hardly have like 2 or 3 numerical relativity waveforms. So we cannot do test against NR, but we can. And the other things is, even though these NR exist, they have limited length. So oftentimes they do not really start at at 20 hertz to do a proper like frequency domain mismatch. So that becomes a bit tricky over there. But you can always do time domain mismatches, and those numbers are these numbers, like this qualitative picture here, that do not change once you cross mass ratio 10. And we also have tested it with the 2 different versions of the OB, the SOB and the TOB, and it's more or less the same.
Okay. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Well, if not, let's send to Siv again.
Thank you.